From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. Well, they've reached an agreement. Then they vote on Tuesday, confronted with the news that 600,000 more American jobs simply vanished last month and still stinging from a presidential reprimand. A group of Republican and Democratic lawmakers struck a deal late Friday night to break a U.S. Senate deadlock over a massive economic stimulus package. Now, this tentative agreement, reached after hours of backroom negotiations and amid tense partisan debate on the Senate floor, would trim the Senate stimulus legislation from $940 billion to around $780 billion. A final vote on the bill will be Tuesday. This will be a combination of tax cuts and spending. Catherine Austin Fitz, our advisor on economic affairs, with us on the line now. Catherine, what do you think? Is it going to work?
No. I mean, the stimulus package is not going to have a big effect. And in fact, my guess is, George, that the impetus to do this was not the 600,000 layoffs, that's what they're saying, but really the meltdown out there in California. Because have the governmental structure controls through very intricate cash flows, federal, state, and local. And what we've been seeing at the county level in California is that system is breaking down. And if that system breaks down, then control top down gets lost.
Absolutely. It's almost like a mini country all by itself, isn't it?
Well, the problem is, you know, when you go through periods like this, the government deficits explode, and the federal government can print money, but the state and the counties can't print money. And so we're seeing tremendous fraying in the relationship between at the state and local level with the feds. And so the feds are going to have to try and buy their way out of that problem, and I suspect one of the reasons that this turned around and got passed, despite the poll seemed to be very much opposed to it, was the real fear of what could happen if you get a real municipal meltdown.
The president is taking a chance very early on his administration, and I'll tell you why, Catherine. He has said that without this stimulus package, the economy will head for a catastrophe. So this gets passed on Tuesday. They start to implement it. Let's make an assumption. Let's hope it works, okay? But okay. Let's make an assumption it doesn't work, that maybe the only way it would have worked is just things would have just died and started all by themselves, just like an economy should. But let's assume this stimulus package fails to work. What has it done to the credibility of President Obama?
Well, then you've got him chasing, you know, it's like chasing your tail. And he's going to be chasing a wave that's past him. One of the challenges with this package is what he came up with was a Christmas tree, not a real vision of sort of America, a role in the world, and how we could create a great economic future for ourselves.
This seemed to come up way too soon, this package.
Well, it didn't necessarily come up way too soon, but I think it didn't really seriously address what's wrong, what can we do about it, and where do we need to go? What does America need to look like? And I think the fear is, among many people, that the reason is the real agenda of what they intend America to look like is one that can't be made transparent in public.
Biggest problem? The banks have failed because of greed. The investment banks have failed because of greed. And things are not selling because the American public has lost confidence right now. Now, if we would just take care of the greed factor, let these banks go by the wayside, protect the American workers, and let them have at least that feeling that there's some hope, I think they'll start spending money again, Catherine.
Right, but the problem is that what happened on Wall Street was not greed. What happened, you know, greed was sort of a byproduct of what happened. But what you've seen is tremendous shift of assets into large corporations in a way that's subsidizing them. And we have this huge centralized bureaucracy, whether it's big banks, big corporations, or big government, and it's not economic, George. It's not creating any value. And it's kind of like, you know, if you're a family and you build a huge house that you can't afford, it costs a fortune to maintain, and, you know, basically it's running around the world killing and stealing more and more just to keep, you know, and I call it sort of the tapeworm because it's like a parasite. And the reality is You know, what you find is, you know, parasites don't like to die. They give up, you know, they put on a real fight. And if they've got guns, it's an effective fight. So how do you tell them, look, you guys aren't adding value. You don't have a fundamental purpose. You have to downsize. You have to consolidate. And maybe you have to go bankrupt.
I will make sure that you, Gerald Celente, and Ms. Shedlock all watch what's going on. Catherine's got two websites out there, financialpermaculture.com and Solari, S-O-L-A-R-I.com. Catherine, thank you. Venezuela's state oil company is behind on billions of dollars in payments to private oil contractors all around the world, including here in this country, some of which have now stopped work. Even as President Hugo Chavez continues to funnel more oil revenue to his programs, unpaid invoices jumped 39% in the first 9 months of last year, now reaching nearly $8 billion in September. Now, that was when the world oil was selling at $100 a barrel. Now they got even more problems. A Georgia peanut plant knowingly shipped salmonella-laced products as far back as 2007. At times sending out tainted products after tests confirmed contamination, according to inspection records just released. The salmonella outbreak has been blamed for at least 8 deaths, 575 illnesses in 43 states. The Justice Department has opened a criminal investigation. More than 1,550 products have been recalled. I bet someone will go to jail for this. His name is Jerry Yang, a stem cell scientist who successfully cloned the very first farm animal in the United States. He has died after a long battle with cancer. He was 49 years old. Yang, the director of the Center for Regenerative Biology at the University of Connecticut, died at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. In 1999, Yang put Yukon at the world's scientific map when a Holstein named Amy was born. She was the very first cloned farm animal in the United States. The world's first cloned animal was Dolly the sheep, created in 1996 in Scotland. James Whitmore, the many-faceted character actor who delivered strong performances in movies, television, and especially the theater with his popular one-man shows about Harry Truman, William Rogers, and also so many others, has died. He was 87.
To be a good President, I fear that a man cannot be his own mentor. He cannot live the Sermon on the Mount. He has to be a Machiavelli, a Caesar, a Borgia, an unctuous religio, a liar, a whatnot, to be successful, so I probably won't be.
That was James Whitmore playing the part of Harry Truman. The Emmy and Tony winning actor was diagnosed with lung cancer the week before Thanksgiving. He died Friday afternoon at his Malibu home. A lot of you will also remember him as playing the part of Brooks in the movie Shawshank Redemption. Police in South Korea say an elderly woman has failed her driving test, not for the first time, not for the second time, but she's now failed 771 times. But the 68-year-old has apparently told the local media there she has no intention of giving up. The woman has taken the test almost every working day since 2005. Man, if she ever gets her license, I am not driving in South Korea. Reports from Ghana. Lacking credibility, but a further example of how easily the public can be swayed, a scientist, his name, Mr. Joris Waterberg, has told the Ghanaian radio station Joy FM that the 20th of December 2012 would be characterized by unprecedented earthquakes across the globe, the earth would cease spinning, mountains would be flattened, and most humans on the planet will die. Although a magnetic pole reversal does happen every 700,000 years, there is no apparent evidence yet that the earth would reverse its spin, nor is there any reason to believe it would happen in 2012. Up next, David Wilcock, as we talk about 2012. Special night here, back by popular demand, David Wilcock. He's an author, lecturer, researcher. He has intensively researched ufology, ancient civilizations, consciousness science as well. He's a public speaker. I'll tell you a little bit about one of his speaking engagements coming up sometime this month. Here he is on Coast to Coast AM. David, welcome back.
Well, George, it's a real blessing that we have that kind of grassroots support that I'll be on basically twice in 1 month almost.
Well, let me tell you something. You did a phenomenal job for us the last time you were on, got lots of emails. And
thank you.
Tommy said, let's do it. Plus, next hour, we've got a little surprise. You to us and us to you, by the way.
Oh, I like that. One hand washes the other.
That's right. The story I had before you came on had to do with someone in Ghana talking about it's the end for all of us on 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Some have said this on this program as well. You have not. Tell us where you're coming from.
Well, that's a complex way to jump in, but let's go for it, man.
Yep.
Essentially, it goes back to a combination of very hardcore scientific data coupled with intuitively derived data. So we have to talk about one in order to talk about the other. I did want to talk more about science tonight because some of the only critical letters I received were that I was not going into enough scientific detail to back these things up. So I'm hoping we can do some of that.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay, but first of all, you have to understand that the context is that I have had some pretty phenomenal intuitive experiences. 5 years old, out-of-body experience. 7 years old, I begin reading about ESP, studying the exercises, practicing them, having no idea that this would eventually lead to some sort of telepathy that I would be doing with what appears to be this higher self, which basically is you, but it's millions of years more evolved than where you are now. And from that perspective, there is no boundary imposed by linear time. And the way that this was proven to me began when I started doing readings in 1996, and I would have a stack of cassette tapes where I had dictated words that I did not remember what I said because I was in a deep trance. And then a month might go by. In some cases, there's been actually 7 years. There was a bank of about 20 tapes that I just got too busy and I never transcribed. And 7 years later, they're describing the house that I'm in. They're describing the way that the driveway looks. They're describing plants that I have growing on the refrigerator. I mean, so what I've seen in my private experience is an incredible variety of data showing me that there is no boundary imposed by linear time to this higher self that we have, these higher forces. Given that information, we have reason to believe that when the most credible of these sources consistently say that our galaxy is an intelligent, superconscious being,
mm-hmm.
that it programmed human life to evolve on all the planets wherever it will form throughout the galaxy, that human beings are basically the de facto standard of the galaxy, that then what we see is that there's obviously human beings out there that are more evolved than we are in the sense of their technology, their telepathic ability. Many UFO witnesses report beings that walk through walls and have levitation capability. All kinds of very phenomenal effects like that. So it would appear when you start looking at all the great traditions in all the great spiritual literature throughout the world, there's always some mention of angelic or divine beings of some kind, which are human in nature.
Sure.
And so all of this leads me back to the fact that I have had synchronicity happening in my life for many years. Some of it involves seeing numbers on the clock. People always ask me, what does that mean? Essentially, what you do is if you see like 333 or 1212 or 1111, something like that, you want to look at what you were thinking about right before you saw the numbers, and that will be flagging that thought as being important for you.
I see.
So what I'm trying to say is that we have been conditioned through economics to believe in scarcity. We believe that we don't have enough. We're running out of fossil fuel. The weather is not cooperating. All these earth changes imply that we're some sort of virus, as it said in the Matrix movie, that we're like a cancer on the earth, and that we are in the process of being exterminated.
Why are so many of us talking about 2012? Not only because it's getting closer, but it seems to be everywhere. I mean, people who would never bring this up are now talking about it on the streets. Why?
Well, George, I don't know if you realize this, but I use MySpace. I have a myspace.com/divinecosmos mm-hmm. as my account. Now I'm going to be bombarded, I'm sure. But that's
you will after we chat with you next hour,
yeah,
by the way.
So But anyway, last week they put up this full-page splash screen about this thing called the Institute for Human Continuity in 2012.
All right.
And it was this big ad that basically took the exact same catchphrases of 2012, the movie. What if 6 billion people were about to die? You know, would the government tell you? Of course not. And then it says, but the Institute of Human Continuity will. And you go on their site, and it's all like Planet X and this and that. I mean, the graphic design is nice, but they're basically saying, join the lottery, as if this is some sort of group that's going to, like, save you, but only if you're one of the chosen people. And so some people have speculated, is this like some sort of government front or whatever? But there's some really concrete stuff going on that I'd like to point out about 2012. First of all, I don't know if you're aware of this, George, but the crop circle phenomenon goes all the way back to 815 AD.
Yes.
Okay, you do know that.
Thanks to Linda Moulton Howe.
Right. Okay, good. So what we know is, for those who don't know the story, I'll just cover it very briefly.
Okay.
The Archbishop of Lyon in France issued an edict for the people called Against the Foolish Opinion of the Masses about Hail and Thunder. And this basically said that the pagan people of the time believed in what they called cloud ships from Magonia, and that they were flattening crops into circles, and it was believed that these crop circles were being formed so that the ETs would protect them against bad weather. Well, we have had, there's an ongoing chain of documentation to support crop circles showing up all throughout history, and I go into this in my presentations, including the one I'm going to be giving the Conscious Life Expo coming up here on the weekend of February 14th, and you're going to be there too, so I'm very excited about that.
Sure thing.
So this is one of the things I'm going to be talking about, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, George, is, as I'm sure you've probably heard before, a very, very phenomenal event has happened, because we've been seeing some beautiful, gorgeous, amazing crop circles over the years, but it was this past season that we got a formation that very precisely gave us the planetary alignment at the end of 2012. And it shows you all the planets, the inner planets, the outer planets. It is the alignment for that exact day when the Mayan calendar ends. And when you start to look at the evidence supporting the idea that the growth nodes on these crops are being bent but without breaking, and that the crops continue growing even when they've been put down, and that like large amounts of underground water seem to disappear as if there's a technology that's soaking up that water to stop the crops from catching on fire. Otherwise, they would burn up if it was some kind of microwave or something. We have a technology that we certainly don't have access to. The complexity of some of these formations is off the chart. Some of them have appeared in 15 minutes, like the one in front of Stonehenge, and I guess it was 96. It was like three windmills or something. So the point is here that crop circles are something that goes beyond this idea in your mind that, oh, well, this is just a guy on the radio talking about 2012. There's nothing that's really going to happen. Well, these are things that are showing up in the crops that you can measure, that you can go and look at. And they've been showing up since 815 AD, and there's a whole chain of history through the 1600s with Dr. Robert Plot, and then the mowing devil story and all this stuff I'm sure you've heard now. The point being that we are now seeing interplanetary climate change, which is the actual physical scientific proof that there is some sort of non-ordinary event taking place in the solar system. This is not your typical everyday year on Earth. And obviously we can see that in society. But there was one other thing I wanted to mention just to make sure that I get it out here. And that is a study that was done by a doctor named, and I'm bringing this up on the computer so I make sure I don't make a mistake.
All right.
People don't hound me.
Oh, was this a scientific study?
Yeah. His name is Dr. John Hawks, H-A-W-K-S, and I encourage everybody to look this guy up. He's from University of Wisconsin. He's an anthropologist, and he studied rapid evolution in human beings, what he called positive selection in the Darwinian sense. And what he found was that in the last 40,000 years, human evolution has been what he called in a period of supercharged evolutionary change. And then if you look to the last 5,000 years, he has discovered that evolution, the speed of evolution, has moved 100 times faster. But the most intriguing study that he came out with at all is, George, let's paint a picture for the audience of a Neanderthal, right?
Yeah.
Here's this guy with a clunky old brow, hair all over his back, caveman, right?
You're talking about my producer, Tom, again, David, and I told you not to do that.
That's classified information.
We're going to be back with you in just a moment. Ah, but Coast to Coast AM continues, as a matter of fact, Saturday and this Sunday, none other than Ian Punnett. Ian, how are you?
I'm just doing great. I'm looking forward to seeing you. I'm like counting the days now. We're like a month away from the talk radio seminar.
You're all excited about that. Last time I saw you, it was the year before last,
right,
and we were on top of a building, and you were trying to push me.
wait, I don't remember that part. I do remember, though, that that was a fun time. That was when Art got his award. That was a great weekend.
Coming up
this weekend, we've got two shows. I'm so excited about this first one. You know, we talk a lot about food and about, I know we're running commercials about seeds and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this whole other element to the discussion about food, and that just might be erosion. One professor has been working on what he believes is a very scary model that says world soil erosion will preclude successful crops in a frighteningly short period of time. And he says you can learn a lot by studying the soil about any civilization, and he'll give us the results of what the future of our civilization is looking like based on the soil.
Well, you know, the soil goes, so goes that civilization.
Yeah, and so especially now when we're looking at the possibility of not being able to sustain our own food systems as they exist now, then what? Then coming up on Sunday night, a woman who maintains that this is a true story, that she had an ongoing romantic relationship with a time traveler through a time portal, and not just one. In fact, in her book, as I understand it, she wasn't even allowed to tell the whole story, but she will on Sunday night, and she'll explain how this ties in with the Holy Grail, and it's just fascinating. Plus, we'll have a special guest, the most famous of the Jasons from the Friday the 13th series, coming up in our new segment, First Hour, Sunday night.
Okay, because you know we're going to have Friday the 13th next Friday, as a matter of fact. Ian Punnett, Saturday and Sunday on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, back at you with David Wilcock. David, you were talking about this analogy of Neanderthals.
Yeah.
Let's go back to that. Go ahead.
And I've painted the picture that you have a Neanderthal with the clunky brow and the hairy body and everything. And we typically think of that as a caveman and much less sophisticated than we are. Now think about periods in like the dawn of history, such as Sumer, like 3000 BC.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's paint that picture. Okay, John Hawkes, the same University of Wisconsin anthropologist, has studied human evolution and found that we now, human beings now, are more genetically different from people in 3000 BC than the people in 3000 BC were from Neanderthals. Now, that's scientific proof, man.
And that's bizarre, too, because it puzzles you, because something caused that.
Well, you don't usually think of people that were around the time that some of the older books in the Bible might have been written, or the Bhagavad Gita in India, as being closer to Neanderthals
than us,
than they are to us.
That's true.
But that's what it is. Okay, and of course you've heard about the Flynn effect, in which every 10 years people's IQ is rising, and
mm-hmm.
this is over 20 countries. And the tests that show it the most are the nonverbal tests, which have to do with abstract symbolic thinking. It's like the whole way our minds work is changing.
Which is critical to pure genius.
Absolutely. So the point, here's the smoking gun, the mechanism that you want to see how this works. Okay, first of all, you have to establish that this is not an ordinary moment in history, which we can do by looking through the entire solar system, and if you want me to, we can list all those things, every planet, right down the list. Mercury was the only one we didn't have data for, and that just changed last year because they came out with stuff showing the magnetic field is growing. I mean, all the planets are getting ozone charge, they're getting brighter, they're getting hotter on the surface, in some cases 200% hotter, like the surface of the moon Io around Jupiter. Happened in a very short period of time. These are profound changes. This is why Richard Hoagland and I wrote a paper in 2004 about this. And Richard did ask me to say this one thing, which I will do for him.
All right.
We have some very exciting news. One of the biggest television broadcast networks, has contacted Richard, wants to do a 2012 documentary. They estimate that the listenership to Coast could double by this. They estimate that, well, first of all, Richard is going to be like a key producer. He wants me involved. George, he may ask you to be involved if you want to be.
Nah, can't be.
Oh.
Too much.
Conflict of interest.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, with my sci-fi show.
Well, that's understandable.
But anyway, we'll give you as much support as we can.
Right. So just to honor Richard, he asked me to say that the amount of interest that people demonstrate will determine how quickly this show gets off the ground. And so he asked that anybody who's interested in seeing a 2012 show send you, George, email.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. That's Richard's gift to you.
Inundate
blow
me,
up your
right?
inbox.
Yeah. Thanks, Richard.
So, yeah, if you want to see 2012... It's true, though. I mean, I think that it would help to boost your listenership, and that would be a great thing. But anyway, okay, I've said that. So let's get back to DNA, because as we talked about in the last show, and there's a transcript on my website, divinecosmos.com, we got the whole darn thing transcribed, and as you said, it was a groundbreaking show. DNA, we can now prove definitively, is a wave. DNA is not something that just randomly arrives by these molecules combined together for no reason. And there's many ways we can show this. And I want to give you some new ones that we didn't talk about the last time.
There's a design behind this, David.
Oh, yeah. Now, I want you to think about for a moment black magic. I want you to think about people that do voodoo or something where they try to create fear. And, of course, this is what's happening on a global level right now. There's all this fear being created.
Right.
Let's think about the idea that maybe when you go into fear that your DNA is releasing some sort of biofield or some sort of energy, and that somebody could actually harness that. Well, there's a Russian scientist named Dr. A.B. Burlakov, and that's B-U-R-L-A-K-O-V. Anybody can look this up online. And he did an experiment with fish eggs in which he had fertilized fish eggs that were brought within optical contact of each other. And when they were about the same age in their development, the weaker one, the one that was just a little bit younger, would actually catch up to the other ones faster. The growth rate would suddenly accelerate, okay?
Huh.
Which suggests that there's some sort of energy that's feeding life as we know it. But here's, George, where it gets really fascinating. And, in fact, I'm even thinking of changing the script to my movie Convergence and putting this in there somewhere. When you take weaker eggs that are not as old and put them in front of eggs that are newer. Now, again, all they have to have is optical contact. These are hermetically sealed containers in which there's just like a pane of glass between them so they can see each other. What do you think might have happened when you take the weaker eggs and the stronger eggs and you put them next to each other?
I bet the weaker eggs get stronger.
The weaker eggs die.
They die?
They get weak, they mutate, they wilt, and they die. And the stronger eggs get stronger.
Why?
This gets back to why there is black magic and how the occult can use that to further their own spiritual evolution on that path. It gets back to the alpha male. Why do you think, George, that a home team is apt to do better in a game than the away team?
And that's historically accurate.
Yeah.
Well, one is you'd say they're more comfortable with the field. They know the corners, for example, in hockey a little bit better. They know the rim better in basketball. The roar of the crowd helps them, but there's an overall feeling of being there, knowing, being comfortable, being in control.
Well, this is where it gets back to the idea that just like the fish eggs, where you can actually have a biofield that's strengthening health, there's another scientist who did a total of like 100, he summarized like 160 different studies of healing and found fully 64% of them showed a positive effect. This is everything from single-celled organisms all the way up to complex human healing that involves, like, New York to L.A., people doing it by telepathy. So we have some kind of energy, and all we have to do is basically feel love or send our energy or support to someone. So the negative elite, these Illuminati types, like to be in a position in which everyone is afraid, and then they become the alpha male that everybody rallies behind for strength. Because the alpha male, the way nature set it up, is that the entire group sends their energy to the alpha male to make him stronger so he can fight for them so that they can survive.
And it works.
It works. And it's the same thing that you see again, you raised some very good points about how the hockey could be, you know, they know the corners better, and in basketball they know the rink better, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't change the fact that part of what could be going on is this energy that the crowd is sending to the guys on the field.
Precisely.
It's making them healthier, stronger, more vital. And again, if somebody wants to attack this, we have laboratory evidence. Another thing along that same line that I find really, really fascinating is a study that was done actually with raspberry calluses. And these are actually these cancerous cells that grow on a raspberry. Now, think about this, right? Because this applies to human physiology.
Okay.
Okay? It's this big, ugly, gross-looking black thing that grows on a raspberry. It shouldn't be there. For all intents and purposes, a surgeon, if it was a human body, would cut that out and say, get rid of it.
Right.
What if you take a holographic image of a healthy raspberry plant, and then you shine the hologram into the tumor? What do you think happens?
You trick it?
The tumor completely heals and turns into a healthy raspberry plant.
Do we have scientific proof that this happens?
Look it up. The guy's name is Budakovsky. V is the first initial, and then the name is Budakovski. And this is groundbreaking stuff.
So the cells of this diseased portion of a raspberry
actually reverted back to healthy cells and form a new plant that you can sprout and germinate into a healthy raspberry plant.
Yeah, but so what you're saying about all this is somehow they are aware or they have some kind of telepathic vision to know this, to see this?
Well, okay, the bottom line is that the hologram is a complete storage of all the wavelengths that are given off by the DNA of healthy raspberries. So when you shine that hologram into the unhealthy DNA, it repatterns the unhealthy DNA back into healthy DNA again.
So are you saying if we had a hologram of someone who was sick and shine it right into, let's say, his cancer, that it could defeat it?
Absolutely. In fact, there was another case where this is Dr. Peter Garyev. He killed ordinary seeds with radioactivity. So these are dead seeds, radioactively killed. He shines a laser through healthy seeds, redirects it into the destroyed seeds. The destroyed seeds come back to life. He also did it with rats. He did it with a pancreas. There was a drug that basically gives the rats diabetes. It's called Alexan, and their pancreas is destroyed. They get diabetes and die within 4 to 6 days.
Okay.
Then he actually did surgically remove the liver and pancreas from healthy rats and then shined the light through it into the rats that would have normally died from this toxin that would kill their pancreas. And those rats, just getting the light beam through healthy pancreas tissue, the pancreas completely rejuvenated. I mean, it's like the pancreas is basically dissolved. It's gone. It disappeared. The pancreas regrows from nothing. So, George, this is why we need to get this stuff mainstream, because this technology has existed. It threatens the pharmaceutical industry. It threatens the powers that be to keep us healthy, which means that if we're stronger, then we can fight back.
Why aren't these researchers getting grants? Why aren't these researchers getting Nobel Prizes in science with these discoveries?
Because, first of all, these are guys in Russia, and so they are safe from the kind of stuff that would happen if you tried to publish this research in the U.S.
Okay, all right.
When you try to get this kind of stuff published in the Western scientific world,
you get crushed.
You get in big trouble. The minute that you try to file a patent for any type of free energy or anti-gravity type device that would actually work, then suddenly, knock, 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 there's somebody at the door, and in one hand he's got money, and in the other hand he's got a gun.
Or if the guy opened up a clinic, they'd shut him down.
Exactly. So they'll get you for medical malpractice. They'll look through the last 500 years of your tax returns and see if you ever, like, you know, messed up on a dollar. Like, look at what just happened to Tom Daschle, you know? So that's how it works.
A little more than a dollar.
Well, I'm teasing, but, you know. The point is that we are in a situation now in which the greatest study is Garyev, G-A-R-I-A-E-V. And here's a guy who takes the laser beam again, shines it, the same guy that did the pancreas study and the seed study, okay, shines a laser beam through a salamander's embryo and redirects it into a frog's embryo. And the frog embryo completely reorganizes the DNA and turns into a salamander.
Now, when you say redirects it, what do you mean?
Okay,
what's he
doing?
If you want
to drill down specific, we can do that. They're called retrotransposons. They're little pieces of DNA that actually can break off from one area and move to another area and thus rewrite DNA code
at
that level. Another thing you need to keep in mind is that DNA is only about 2 nanometers wide, which is down at the level in which you get wave-particle duality and all this chaos theory and quantum mechanics. You know, the Schrodinger's cat and the cat's dead, but the cat's alive in the box at the same time, all that kind of paradoxical-sounding stuff.
All right.
So DNA can flip-flop, and what we're seeing now is concrete evidence that you can take tumor DNA that normally we would say is it's done, it's over, it's dead. You can redirect it and make it into healthy tissue. You can regrow a pancreas that didn't even exist. The pancreatic DNA comes back to make the pancreas. You can actually change a salamander's – you can change a frog's egg into a salamander or vice versa. And that gets back to why there is the 62-million-year cycle that was found – by Dr. Robert Rode from UC Berkeley, again, scientific, credible stuff. And these are species evolutions in which for 62 million years, basically, nothing changes on the planet. You get these little crabs running around, and all of a sudden, bam, in a very short period of time in terms of evolution, there's this massive surge of new species. And I might add, for all the people that would attribute this to catastrophe, that in some of these mass evolution events, there is no sign of any type of massive change on the planet. And another thing I'd like to point out is that 65 million years ago, at the time that the dinosaurs went extinct...
When we think the asteroid wiped them out.
Right. There are scientists who have gone back and have calculated the planetary orbits, and I don't have their name right in front of me, but there was a team of guys that did this in a computer simulation. They found that all of the planets in our solar system go completely chaotic when you try to dial it back to 65,000 years ago. There's like some sort of nexus point where everything got jostled up. So that's the scary part for the people that want to be afraid, because here we are with interplanetary climate change. The sun is going nuts. The planet is going nuts. All the other planets are going nuts.
People are going nuts.
But bear in mind that what we saw the last time was a massive species evolution, which is consistent with these cycles that are so long in duration that the only adequate explanation for it is some sort of galactic energy field. I do not ascribe significance to a Planet X, because 62-million-year orbit is basically like, you know, it's basically a quarter of the distance around the galaxy. And Richard has pointed out that these are like geometric harmonics, you know, that as we orbit the galaxy, we're hitting these geometric node points, just like, you know, your octahedron, which is two Egyptian pyramids touching at the base. It's like, imagine a structure like that that's made of energy in the galaxy. And you can't see it, but you can measure it with certain instruments.
I'm just blown away, though, by the use of the hologram and the laser.
I got to say, George, when I saw that, it was only like, you know, I found this for the dowsing conference I did a while back.
Yeah.
And I was just so excited, I almost jumped up and down.
You always jump up and down.
Well, not like Tom Cruise on Oprah. When I get on Oprah, I won't do that.
And you know what? You just might get there, too.
It looks like it. Dreams have been telling me lately that there's some really big stuff opening up, and this thing with Richard is one example. There's a very, very substantial piece of news about my film that's really exciting, but I have to keep it completely confidential right now.
And next hour, toward the end of the hour, I'm going to play a little surprise for you.
Uh-huh.
And have you explain that. Something
that sounds good.
Something that we were able to obtain.
So. And let's open the floodgates, man. I'm ready for the calls.
All right.
Whatever they want to talk about.
And David, give us your website, please.
It's divinecosmos.com, and you can read the transcript of our previous show there, get a lot more information. I went into all the Stargate stuff and time travel and all the really esoteric things. Here I wanted to just get focused on some science that we can really prove.
Over the weekend, David is going to be at the Conscious Life Expo on the Valentine Day weekend. He's got a speech on February 15th. I'm going to be out there Saturday and Sunday as well. Give some support there to David. It is in Los Angeles. You can go to the ConsciousLifeExpo.com. That's ConsciousLifeExpo.com to get more information. David goes all around the country speaking about many of the things you've heard him talk about right now. We'll open up the phone lines in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, back with David Wilcock and your calls.